Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and
anything else we feel like.
We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started. Here's an old classic that sounds just as good today as it did when we were kids.
Something a little different today.
We do another podcast every Friday called The Mark Striegel Show. And my co-host on that is Victor Ruiz, who has done a lot of co-hosting here on Talking Metal through the years. But we figured we kind of do this episode of Talking Metal more in the format of The Mark Striegel Show. And so without further ado, Victor, how are you, man?
Doing good. How are you, Mark?
I'm good. Thank you so much for joining me for an additional podcast this week. As I mentioned, we do a podcast that we post every Friday, and this week you're joining me for the Tuesday episode of Talking Metal. We just heard A Passage to Bangkok by Rush. Of course, the big news last week, we lost Neil Peart, and pretty crazy. I have to admit, I was surprised, but not shocked, because I'd heard a rumor like 2 years ago that he had brain cancer. I mean, I heard that rumor and I remember telling a handful of people, and was kind of shot down, like, oh, that's bullshit, don't believe that. But it was true, I guess. I heard from some people up in Canada. I think the Mitches were talking about it up there, my friends. Mitch LaFon, maybe Mitch Joel, somebody else, I can't remember, and they weren't even sure if it was true. But I remember hearing that rumor at some point a few years ago, and never really publicly put it out there, because A, it was, you know, it's a medical thing, and B, I really at first believed it, and then started to think, yeah, maybe it's not true. But yeah, kind of weird. And wow, what a major loss for the rock world. Not only a great drummer, but the lyricist of Rush. What were your thoughts? Are you a big Rush fan, Victor? I don't even know what your relationship is with that band.
Yeah, you know, Rush is a band that I can't consider myself a huge fan of, but I think that there are songs in their catalog that I absolutely love, and then there's a bunch that I'm not that familiar with. That doesn't take away from the fact that they're amazing musicians. And I actually have a Blu-ray of theirs that at around the time that I got my Blu-ray player, it was one of the only, like, concert things that was available to me, and I'm like, all right, well, I'm not a huge fan, but let me get this. And I played it a ton of times, because it's just cool to see them play this stuff live. And, you know, mostly Neil Peart, with the way that that he plays, he was amazing. You know, whether you're a big fan or not, I think it's undeniable just what a powerhouse drummer he was, and how influential he was, as far as, you know, I think if you really dissect what he brought to the table as a drummer, if you really look at a lot of, obviously, progressive metal bands that are out there now, but also, like, a lot of, I would say, you know, death metal and black metal bands, the way that their drummers play, that they're always doing something, whether, you know, whether it's appropriate or not in the song. I think a lot of that comes from him as well, where he was always busy filling in notes and different things with different percussive elements during the, you know, the songs. And as you mentioned, you know, just the lyrics, because it was funny when this happened. You know, I sent you a text message, and, you know, instantly I went to Facebook, and one of the interesting, or most interesting, posts that kind of stuck with me since Friday was John Leon of White Wizard fame. And he's always professed that Maiden and Rush are his two biggest influences. And he wrote something to the effect of, you know, people don't understand when I say, you know, that I cried when this musician died, or when this other one died. And he said, you know, finding out that, you know, he just died this afternoon, he wrote something to the effect of, you know, I've been, you know, teary eyed all day. You know, he was a huge influence. And it made me think, you know, whether I was a big fan or not, a lot of these songs, you know, I was playing them for my wife and for my kids this weekend. A lot of these songs, you kind of grew up with them if you listen to terrestrial rock radio. I mean, how many hits did they have that are still played today on the radio. You know, a lot of people go, you know, point towards, you know, Tom Sawyer and stuff like that. But there's close, you know, 10 to 15 songs that were continuously played on the radio. So it's almost like losing someone who, or, you know, a part of an aspect of music that you've connected with so much over the years. So, I mean, listening to the lyrics probably a little bit more in depth than I have ever with Rush, you know, because so much was made out of him being a lyricist. Yeah, I got totally where John was coming from when he mentioned that. So, yeah. I mean, I think it's a tremendous loss. And I mentioned this to you. It was weird that things like CNN and Dateline Hollywood and a lot of other sites that are outside of, you know, Blabbermouth and Brave Words and Rolling Stone picked up on it. And they picked up on it right away. So, I mean, I think that's really like a tip of the hat to how important he was as a musician and how much this band, whether they were huge or not, how much, you know, they were really influential to definitely rock culture over the years.
Yeah. And I think what you said there, you know, with CNN and major news outlets picking up the story, that's what should have happened. And I'm glad that it did happen because, you know, in like you said, in the past, we've seen some of our rock heroes die who have sold millions of records and they're simply ignored by the press, the, you know, the non-music press. So, yeah, good for those outlets for reporting this, because this was a major band that sold millions and millions of records and had an enormous cultural impact. And a big part of that was Neil Peart, because again, not only was this guy the drummer of the band, he was the lyricist. And man, I go back, my two big Rush records, and I love Spirit of the Radio, one of my favorite all-time tunes, Free Will, another great one. But for me, the two big records, and back in the day, before Spotify and Apple Music and having every album at the tip of your fingertips, you couldn't, as a kid, you know, growing up, I'm born in 1969. So as a kid growing up in the late 70s and early 80s, throughout the 80s and even into the 90s, you couldn't afford always to have every album by every band that you liked. So you kind of had to pick your poison. For me, those two records, two of my favorite all-time records, were Moving Pictures and 2112 by Rush. Those were my two Rush records and the ones I just wore the grooves off of. And we heard a little music off of 2112 earlier in this episode. I did, you know, on a personal note, I did get to see Rush three times live. And each one was a tremendous memory for me. Grace Under Pressure with Gary Moore opened that show. That was really kind of my second biggest, my second big concert. I first saw Motley Crue with Saxon opening, and then that was in a theater because Motley Crue wasn't that big at that time. And then on Grace Under Pressure, I guess that would have been 84, the way I'm remembering it. I saw at the Rosemont Horizon, my friend Terry and I went, and his uncle, who he lived with, took us to the show and went into the show with us. And that was a great memory too. And then I saw them in 1988 was the next time I saw them, you know, what, like 4 years later when I was in college. I saw them in Worcester, Massachusetts. I'm not sure. I noticed they did two dates in Worcester. They played December 2nd, 87. So they played December 2nd, 1987, and December 3rd, 1987. And that was the Hold Your Fire tour, which I did a YouTube video a couple days ago. And I think I said I saw them on the Roll the Bones tour in 88, which was incorrect. It was actually the Hold Your Fire tour in late 87. And then I saw them, you know, I don't know, 12 years ago or so at Radio City Music Hall in New York City on the 30th anniversary tour. And that was the last time I saw them live. But going back to the set list that I saw in 1987 in Worcester, Massachusetts, December 1987, opened with Big Money, Subdivisions, Limelight, Marathon, Turn the Page, Prime Mover. What's Prime Mover? I don't know. That's the song. I would have to look that one up. I don't know that one off the top of my head. Manhattan Project, Closer to the Heart, Red Sector A, Force 10, Time Stand Still, Distant Early Warning, Lock and Key, Mission, Territories, YYZ, The Rhythm Method into the Drum Solo, Spirit of the Radio, Tom Sawyer, Encore was 2112, The Temple of Syrinx, La Villa Strangato, that cool instrumental, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, In the Mood. Excuse me, no Red Brigetta, I guess. Wow, that's interesting. Because I do believe on Grace Under Pressure and the 30th anniversary tour, they did play Red Brigetta. But yeah, good stuff. And wow, what a band. And again, for me, 2112 was always an interesting record because, you know, I loved that first side. And then the second side slowly grew on me. I remember I was first really into A Passage to Bangkok and the Closer, Something for Nothing. And it was those songs in between there, like I think it's like Twilight Zone and Lessons, that I always kind of lifted the needle over those three songs. But right. Eventually those really got into me, into my DNA. And man, every song now on that record is just such an important thing for me, as well as, and the same with Moving Pictures. You know, first it was like side one was just such a perfect rock, you know, shorter songs and just a perfect rock experience. And then side two, it took a little bit more, you know, patience and diving in deeper to those songs on side two. But wow, two tremendous records by a great band that will never play again, really. I mean, there's no way we'll ever see Rush again. And I can't imagine them ever doing anything under the Rush name ever again. So interesting. What I was thinking, what do you think of, like, should they do some sort of like benefit, like Alex and Getty, and get different drummers to come up and play with them? That would be kind of cool, you know?
Well, that's something that I wanted to bring up. Because, all right, so let's think of the timing a little. They said he had brain cancer for what, the last 3.5 years, and they stopped touring what, 5 years ago?
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me, but that sounds about right.
Yeah, so I mean, they've been shooting down for the longest time, Rush playing again, and they said, well, you know, maybe Getty and Alex will play again together. How much of this do you think maybe because they knew that whatever he had, that there was kind of no turning back? And now that, you know, maybe Neil's gone, maybe this opens the door to them playing again together. Maybe not, as you said, under the Rush name, but maybe under some other name, or maybe do a bunch of benefits like you mentioned. I think that would definitely be cool. But you also have to, you know, what drummers do you plug in there? I mean, obviously, Mike Portnoy would be a name that would be interesting there. Danny Carey from Tool, which is who they did apparently Passage to Bangkok, part of it, the other night after he passed away. But how much do you think them not playing together had to do with, you know, them knowing that Neil was going to die? And you know, what drummers would you like to see with them?
I mean, the ones you like, Portnoy and Danny from Tool, obviously, those are obvious ones that I think would work. And I know Alex Lifeson is a big Tool fan. I don't know, man. I don't know. I mean, part of me doesn't want to see it, to be honest. I think you just leave right. It. Everyone always has got to mess with things. And, you know, Getty's voice isn't what it used to be. But, and there's another part of me that would like to see it. So I don't know. Let me think about other drummers that I think they have to be bigger names. Like, I don't think, I mean, Richard Christie or something would be cool, but I just don't think that he's a big enough name for something like that. I mean, I think, you know, the guy Taylor Hawkins from the Foo Fighters and Dave Grohl, obviously not technically quite, at least Grohl's not technically quite what Neil Peart was, but
yeah, they're the same style.
Yeah, but they're big enough names, and mm-hmm. you know, Grohl has almost become this like spokesman for rock in general that I would think he would need to be involved just to bring attention to it. I'm trying to think who else.
He inducted them in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Too.
All right, yeah. I did not know that, so that makes sense. I would say Stuart Copeland of The Police, you know, would be a good person to have involved, and I think he issued a statement about it. Yeah, who else, man? I don't know. I mean, don't know.
I mean, what you're saying makes sense.
Lars Ulrich, I mean, again, not anywhere close to what Neil Peart was technically, but mm-hmm. a massive rock star and a big name who would bring attention to it and help, you know, raise money if they were raising money for a foundation or whatever. So, I mean, to me, I know people are like, oh, well, Lars, well, he could never play Neil Peart. But yeah, it's not about that. It's about, you know, raising awareness and bringing attention to what's going on there. I don't know. Who else?
Yeah, I mean, to your point, if... You know, there's probably a lot of guys like, I don't know, like a Gene Hoglan or people of that caliber, but it's similar to Richard Christie.
No one knows who that is, you know. I mean, Chris Adler, Lamb of God, yeah, sure, but that's not like a household name, you know, so I don't know. But I guess at the end of the day, it would be up to whoever the guys in, you know, whoever Getty and Alex would want to do that. But I think it would be cool to do something like that in this, you know, it doesn't have to be on the stadium level that the Freddie Mercury tribute was back in the day, but I think something in that same vein could be really cool where all these guests come up and to what I said before, where Getty's voice isn't quite what it was. Well, maybe guest singers come up and play these songs. And
sure.
I mean, Rush was an enormous band. And when you look back, I always feel like people have like fuzzy vision when it comes to 2020, especially younger people. They're like, well, back in the 70s, the Ramones were on the radio and Black Sabbath was on the radio and all this stuff. And they weren't. Those bands weren't on the radio, but Rush was. Rush was, right. You know, had a bunch of songs, really, when you think about it, that got radio play. And that's how I discovered Rush. Through it wasn't through word of mouth like I did with, you know, Sabbath. It was definitely the FM radio rock stations really embraced bands like Rush and Triumph, Scorpions. Those were all big bands, where Sabbath really wasn't a big radio band in the 70s, you know. They weren't. The Ramones, they never got on the radio, maybe college radio and here and there,
not
but
until the 90s. Yeah, you know, that's not until around early 90s, around the time that grunge hit, did the Ramones get any airplay, you know, like you're saying. What got airplay? Maybe the song Pet Cemetery around the time the movie came
out.
And we're talking about what, 86 87? You never heard I Want to Be Sedated unless it was exactly what you said, some type of a college thing or like some midnight radio shift when, you know, DJs were allowed to pick their own shit. Outside of that, you know, right. Like I said before, you know, you look at Rush, Working Man, Free Will, Spirit of the Radio, Closer to the Heart, Tom Sawyer, Red Barrichetta, Limelight, Subdivisions, New World Man, Distant Early Warning, Red Sector 8 to a point. Big Money was a big MTV song.
I mean, they used to play Free Will on the radio, like where I lived. You know, YYZ would get radio play.
The 2112 songs you mentioned as well. What other band got like a 10-minute song on the fucking radio? They did.
Maybe Zeppelin. You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so... It is the end of an era, and again, those lyrics that he wrote were just so good. And some of them were cheesy, you know, like song like The Trees. I always thought, I mean, it was a good message. It really was a good message that, and I understand what he was trying to do with it. But those lyrics specifically for that song, I always thought were a little hokey. But sometimes cheesy is good, you know. And I really loved like the story behind Red Bruschetta and the futuristic kind of sci-fi story of that, and the, you know, back on 2112, I mean, that whole side one, that was an epic story. But even the song we heard earlier in the podcast, I mean, that that had a little story. So this guy was a storyteller, you know. A lot of times lyrics might not tell stories. Sometimes they're more just, you know, moments in time or poetry that is more vague. But a lot of the lyrics were not vague. And if you've seen the Rush documentary that Sam Dunn did a number of years back, you already know what I'm going to say. But if you haven't seen it, I do recommend that as viewing material. You know, the one of the most famous Rush lyrics speaks volumes about Neil Peart, and we're talking about the song Limelight. And I think the lyric says, "I can't pretend a stranger is a long-awaited friend." Mm-hmm. I might have a word or two off there, but that was really interesting lyric, and it's revealed in that documentary that that was about the Rush fans, you know. And and in a way, it was a diss at the fans of Rush that Neil, unlike Geddy and Alex, who were very outgoing and always shaking hands, signing autographs, embracing the limelight, Neil didn't like to have to pretend that a Rush fan, a stranger, was a friend. He didn't want to have to pretend and be fake, and that was how he viewed the fans. He wasn't quite as open towards them. There was always a kind of keep your distance between him and the Rush fan base. And you may disagree, but that was what I actually took from the Rush documentary. And so always, it was crazy to think. I would have never thought that was actually about the Rush fans. "I can't pretend a stranger is a long-awaited friend." And written by Neil Peart. And that kind of ties into his death, because here he was sick for at least 3 years battling this. And the more I think about when I was told about that rumor that he had brain cancer, I mean, it could have been 2 years ago, but it could have also been 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm guessing it was like 3 years ago or so. But yeah, so he kept this pretty quiet. I mean, because it wasn't something that was, I mean, Eddie Van Halen, we know, is sick, you know, or not doing well, or, you know, David Lee Roth said that, and people have been speculating, that's kind of been out there. But I think a lot of people with Neil Peart did not see this coming, you know. Right. And so that ties in directly to that lyric of about his privacy. You know, he wasn't somebody who was going to get on there and, you know, talk about his death. I mean, I can't think of, you know, like a Warren Zevon or somebody who went out there and let everybody know, "I'm dying." You know, Neil Peart never did that. There was no goodbye to the fans, you know. There was no final statement from him to the fans. And that is very Neil, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's, and I saw an interview this morning where he kind of explained that a little further, and he mentioned that
Neil?
Neil, yeah, where he talked about the influence for that specific line, and he said that he had seen an interview with an author that the author pretty much said, you know, at a book signing, that all these people wanted, you know, his picture and this and that, and that somebody said, "You know, I identify with you because of this or because of that." And the author pretty much said, "No, you actually don't, because we're two completely different people. You know, what I write, I'm not telling you, you know, 100% a story or whatever. I'm giving you my angle on it. And I'm not telling you everything involved. It's up to you to kind of take your own kind of opinion away and form your own idea of what I'm trying to tell you." And he said that, you know, that he saw that the author said, you know, you really don't know me. You really don't understand me. You know my workings. You know what I do for a living. And you, you know, you buy my books and read them, but it's still up to your interpretation. And Neil Peart thought that that was exactly how he felt. And he goes on to explain, you know, the difference between, you know, introverted people and extroverted people, how some are celebrated and how the others are seen as stuck up or maybe think that they're better than other people. But he goes on to say, you know, I'm a very introverted person. You know, if you're my friend, I'll, you know, joke with you. I'll talk to you for hours. You know, I'll strike up conversations about things that, you know, we have in common. And he says, but if not, you know, I really don't have anything else going on. You know, it's kind of great that you love my music, but we really don't have anything else to share. So he goes on to say, you know, I have no problem taking, you know, the occasional picture and this, that, and the other thing. But, you know, it really bugs him that people come up to him and would say that, you know, that they knew him or right. or whatnot. So, and think about how other bands, you know, like Kiss is on the End of the Road tour for X amount of years, Sabbath, the End, Rush finished and they didn't even say, hey, we're done. You know, not officially. Right. They didn't go out there and, you know, do a big celebration where, you know, they could have. They probably could have, you know, said, hey, one more show in, you know, in Toronto, which is where they're from. And they probably could have sold out, you know, a big stadium. But they chose not to. They just chose to do things their way and end on their terms. And, you know, you got to kind of applaud them for doing that and not, you know, kind of panning to Live Nation or to Ticketmaster or anyone like that. And news has come out today that AEG offered them, I don't know how much, to do a residency in Vegas where they would only have to play, I think it was something like 4 shows a month.
Wow.
For like 2 years or something like that, and they flat out turned them down. And I guess the guy that runs AEG said that, you know, they were his first concert and that they're one of his all-time favorite bands and that he threw money at them like there was no tomorrow, but there was no way of getting them to commit.
Right. Right.
So here's another question that I had for you. Where we've talked about this on the other podcast, where a lot of people's credibility skyrockets after their death, where maybe they've, you know, received, you know, props from the general media or fan base, or even people that aren't fans, as a result of their death. Do you think that, you know, with Neil Peart passing away, that it's that same type of people, you know, or that same type of attention that he's garnering? Or do you think that everything that he's receiving is justified? Like, we've talked about how, you know, with, you know, certain people dying under tragic circumstances, they're catapulted. But I guess, where am
right.
I going?
I know what you're saying. And I mean, I do think this is a tragic circumstance, brain cancer at age 67. There's no doubt that that's tragic. Is it tragic like Dimebag Darrell getting murdered at whatever he was, what, late 30s or something, or 40 years old? I don't even know how old he was. But is it tragic on that level? No. But it's definitely tragic. I think what we're seeing, you know, Justin Trudeau, the what is he, the president, the prime minister of Canada, talking about him. I mean, that's pretty big. You know, it's pretty big to have some, you know, the leader of your home country talking about you. He did die in California, so I'm assuming he was living in California, Neil Peart, when he died. But I don't know. I don't think it's going to propel him to be any more, you know, legendary or godlike than he was already. Because I do think he was, you know, as far as drummers go and just fans go, I mean, he was pretty iconic, pretty big already. So I'm not sure this is going to propel him into legendary status any more so than he may have already been. Okay. That's just me. I don't know. Disagree. Yeah, he did. You know, another thing on another note, he did really change the sound of this band, because let's remember that Rush existed before Neil Peart. And when you go back and you listen to Working Man and some of that real early, what was on that first? Finding My Way was on that first record, right? That was really kind of Zeppelin-esque. You know, they were almost like this Zeppelin kind of knockoff wannabe type of thing going on there. Maybe, you know, some heavier Blue Cheer kind of thrown in there as an influence, The Who. But they really became, in my humble opinion, they became a progressive band on that second album when Neil joined, and Neil took the lyrics to a new level, and Neil took the timings and the rhythms to a new to a new level with Fly By Night, a record that also I really love. You know, that's one I got into a little later in life when I was in high school. Again, I mentioned it was Moving Pictures in 2112, but Fly By Night was a song that was always on the radio, and you know, I always loved that. But you know, Neil Peart came in and wrote 90% of the lyrics on that record. I mean, there were a couple songs. I think Best I Can, Geddy Lee wrote. Maybe there's another one on that record. But he started writing all the lyrics and really took their sound with his drumming patterns to a new place. And yeah, so what a loss. We're talking about Neil Peart, born in, what did you, like 1950? I had that up on the screen and now I don't have it. Let's see, personnel. Oh, here we go. On Wikipedia, according to Wikipedia, born September 12th, 1952, and died January 7th, 2020, at age 67, far too young to leave us. Yeah, for sure. For sure. All right. Well, let's kind of segue. You know, I do like to keep these to 30-40 minutes, and we're playing some music too, but I know it's a tough topic to segue off of, but you mentioned to me earlier the nonsense with LA Guns, a band that put out a great record last year, by the way, and I saw both versions of LA Guns last year, but there are kind of two versions of LA Guns, and what, so they're suing each other now? Is that what's happening, Victor?
Yeah, the Phil Lewis and Tracy Guns version is now suing the Steve Riley version, saying something to the effect of that there was never a legal, there was nothing legally set in stone that Riley could use the name, that whatever paperwork that they put together, like, never went through the, you know, all the correct legal proceedings to make it official and legally binding. And apparently now, you know, the typical thing that happens when you have multiple, or, you know, two bands with the same name where they fragmented this way, you know, they're claiming that, you know, they don't want to mislead fans, and they, you know, it's harder for them to sell their band if Riley's out there and trying to tour the same places.
Yeah, I kind of agree with it. You know, I can't think of any product or event. You know, it's like, you can't have two bands out there with the same name. It's like, you can't do that in sports. It's like, you can't do that anywhere else. It's like, I think on a consumer level that we should just have one LA Guns out there, one rat out there. You know, I do think that's the smart thing to do and the fair thing to do. However, you know, I'm also against, you know, I like a free market, and I think you should let capitalism take over that. But it is misleading too, you know, because I know, like, for that brief period where there were like two rats out there touring, I know somebody was like, yeah, I'm going to see Rat, and meanwhile it was like Bobby Blotzer was the only member, the drummer, you know, and they thought they were going to see Steven. And this is obviously a casual fan, and there's a lot of casual fans out there. I mean, it's not all the a lot of the people who show up at these shows. It is the casual fan. It's not the, you know, people who even are on Blabbermouth every day or know that there's two Rats or two LA Guns. So I get it. I get it. And if I were Phil Lewis or you know, Tracy Guns or something, I would want the other one shut down too. So I kind of side with them. And having seen the, what's the guy's name? Riley?
Steve Riley.
Yeah, yeah, Steve Riley. Having seen his version of LA Guns last year, and also what I'll call the real version of LA Guns with Phil Lewis and Tracy Guns, they were both good. I mean, but the Phil Lewis version is just so much better, honestly. And but I did enjoy seeing the other one at M3 last year. They did fine. And the version, the Riley version, is playing M3 again this year. So I'm wondering if that's what spawned this lawsuit. Are they also playing other shows?
I would imagine that's the case. Okay. You know, I would think that the M3 is the big thing, because that's probably a, you know, decent chunk of change to them. Right. And they've also been signed to a label, Gold Robot, who has King's X and a few other bands that are, you know, hard rock bands. And I'm assuming that also hurts these guys put out, you know, if they're searching for a deal, if their Frontiers deal is done, you know, it's probably harder for them to find a label as well, because it's kind of the same deal. You've got a limited amount of labels that are probably willing to sign them. So, I mean, if someone is signing the Riley version instead, it's closing doors for them. So,
right. Yeah, so I get that. I get that. And speaking of Guns N' Roses, Richard Ford is saying something like he hopes we hear new music, I guess we being the public and the fan base, hear new music from the band this year, 2020. Predictions, you think that's going to happen?
If it doesn't happen this year, I don't think we'll ever see it. I mean, let me put it to you that way. I don't think we'll see it, though.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, I want to see it. I want to hear it just because I'm curious.
Yeah.
But will we see it? I don't know. I'm hesitant to say yes on that myself. But I do feel that Axl is more secure with Slash and Duff back in the band. And with... Right. Old Chinese Democracy unreleased stuff still continuing to get leaked and surface. Maybe he's more anxious than ever to put out some new music. But we shall see. Only time will tell. And yeah, I'm hopeful too, just like Richard Fortas is hopeful. And yeah, so we are Victor Ruiz and Mark Striegel, and this is an episode of Talking Metal, but I wanted to remind everyone that we do this, pretty much exactly this, right, Victor? We just turn on the mics and talk. We don't even really plan things out too much ahead of time. Sometimes not at all. We have no idea what we're even going to talk about. We just turn the mics on, and we release a podcast every Friday. And it is, unlike Talking Metal, a podcast you have to pay to get. It is $2 a month, basically. And what you do is subscribe to the Patreon page or join us on Patreon. Become a patron on Patreon. And that gives you access to this bonus podcast. And you can pledge whatever amount of money you want to on Patreon. However, to get that podcast, it has to be at least $2 a month, which with, you know, four or more podcasts a month, that breaks down to what, 50 cents an episode? And yeah, so we just wanted to give everyone a taste, all the Talking Metal listeners, a taste of kind of what we do on the Mark Striegel Show every week. And of course, Victor has his own podcasts, plural, right, Victor? Mars Attacks being the flagship podcast. Is that accurate?
Yes, the sinking ship. I mean, the flagship, yes.
The sinking flagship, okay. Right. Which you don't release those on a regular basis. It's kind of, it's when you do them type of thing, right?
Yeah, unfortunately. I'd love to do more, but there's just so many outside circumstances that just keep me from doing them on a regular basis. So
right.
Hopefully I can get back to a point where I can release them weekly like I did before. But just a lot of crap going on in my personal life that just keeps me from doing them regularly.
All right, fair enough. And the Galaxy of Geeks is a show you have too, I know, so people can check that out. And all this stuff, Mars Attacks, Galaxy of Geeks, all up on all your normal podcasting outlets, right? Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts, I would just assume.
Yeah, Spotify, so on and so forth. Yeah.
Now let me ask you, did you ever with Spotify, did your podcast kind of just appear there, or did you approach them and have to ask them to distribute the podcast or submit your RSS feed to them?
Yeah, I had to submit everything to them.
With me, it's weird. Like, I didn't, and one day they just kind of showed up there. So,
is that maybe from your podcasting hosting company?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, it's got to be, right? It's got to be.
I would figure they probably, because Spotify initially went after certain shows of certain sizes, and I'm assuming that with what's the name of the service, Art 12, or what's
Art 19? Yeah, is the service that distributes my podcast. Yeah,
I would assume, because there's some pretty big name shows on there, that they probably approached them and
got all their shows.
Got all the shows. Yeah. I'm assuming.
Yeah, it's a good assumption, for sure. And we do TalkingMetal.net. And when I say we, I mean Victor and I post posts on TalkingMetal.net. Or no, what am I saying? That's I don't even know my website. TalkingMetal.com and TalkingRock.net. It's about time I learn my websites. But TalkingRock.net is a place where we post stuff, and Victor does a great column every Friday that lists all the new music that you should know about that's being released, which I always love going to and clicking on the links you put up and reading what you have to say about stuff, Victor. So thank you for doing that. And again, every Friday, new music is released, and TalkingRock.net is the place to go to find out what that music is and to listen to what that music, how that music sounds. And I threw it out there because, we get some traffic on TalkingRock.net, and I did mention in a previous episode, I was just curious, do people go there? And I did get some responses from some people I don't normally hear from. So
cool.
It made me feel like we're doing the right thing, at least for now, to keep TalkingRock.net going. If you don't go there, definitely add it to your favorites, and we'd love it if you drop by and check in every now and again. All the podcasts I do, with the exception of the Mark Striegel Show, which is exclusive to Patreon, are up there. That includes the Talking Metal podcast and TalkingRock.net. We also post Victor's Mars Attacks podcast there, right, Victor? And Galaxy of Geeks gets posted there. So there's a lot of podcasts that you can check out there, as well as just regular news items and stuff on the news feed. And again, that's TalkingRock.net. And kind of easing into the new year here, but I am going to start scheduling some interviews. I did start a new job in the fall of 2019, and it was supposed to be a seasonal, but I'm going to stay on with them indefinitely at this point. So trying to kind of still wrap my head around this new schedule and working a lot of hours. But, I do want to, I don't even know where I was going with that. I do want to, keep the content going on TalkingRock.net and keep the podcast going and stuff. I kind of lost my train of thought there. But, yeah, Neil Peart, rest in peace. Right, Victor?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, what a kind of tragic life, too. He lost his wife and daughter.
Within a year, yeah.
Yeah, so just terrible just to go through that. I can't imagine.
Did remarry, though.
Yeah, remarried, and continued to make music, but still, age 67, that's far too young to leave us in today's times. And, yeah, man, So I guess we'll leave it there. So Victor, have a great week. I'll see you in a few days to record the next episode of the Mark Striegel Show, available on our Patreon platform, which is patreon.com/talkingmetal. So check us out there. And there's more than just a podcast there. There's all sorts of posts and discussions and people like Steven Saylor and Steve Hoker, Mike Jones, and a big crew over there, 30 some people all kind of getting together and having private conversations there on Patreon. So all right, Victor, well, thanks as always. And what should we do to take us out? Should we hit LA Guns, or do we want to hit another Rush song? Your choice, or something else. I mean, I'm leaving it totally up to you. Anything you want to play.
Okay.
And I'm putting you on the spot, so take your time.
You're gonna put me on the spot. You love doing this.
Yeah.
Mark loves to ask me questions that we, you know, said before, you know, we normally don't prepare. So he likes leaving me these zingers. So.
No, you know, anything, man. Don't stress out. Don't stress out over it. If there's any song that you're like digging right now, or, you know, you know what I'm digging, and neither one are metal, but I really love the new record by The Who. It's called Who.
Okay.
And I really love Desert Sessions. I don't really love it, but I will say love is a strong word. I like it a lot. Desert Sessions volume, I guess it's 11 and 12. Right. Billy from ZZ Top doing some really cool falsetto vocals on one of the tunes, and just a kind of all-star group of people jamming with Josh from Queens of the Stone Age. The Desert Sessions disc is good. What are you thinking, though? What should we play?
Let's see.
It can be anything. Throw if you got something that you want to promote, or anything.
No, let's do an obscure Rush track here, okay, which I always thought was cool. Name of the track is Armor and Sword, and this comes off of the album Snakes and Arrows.
Cool, let's do it here on Talking Metal. Support all the bands and music we play on Talking Metal by streaming them legally on Spotify and Apple Music, and downloading their music and buying their CDs and all that good stuff. All right, thanks, Victor. We'll check you out soon.
All right, thanks.
The snakes and arrows, a child is heir to, are enough to leave a thousand cuts. We build our defenses a place of safety and leave the dark. Meditate.